offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam Mannam Nididhyasanam. As always, we pick up a discourse of Swami, and the series we're starting is, of course, the 1990 Summer Course series. We play the discourse in small parts and undertake a small discussion following each clip of Swami. And as always, I have the company of Brother Sai Prakash to host the show for you. And like the previous week, we have the pleasure of having the company of Sri Rangarajan Sir, the Controller of Examinations, Sri Satyasai Institute of High Learning. Sai Ram Sir and Sai Ram Sai Prakash.
Sai Ram, Sai Ram.
Happy Martyrs Day to you, and I think we are here to play our part as Martyrs, and that's how this discourse is panning out, to be honest. And we are in the middle of this wonderful discourse, and that's the only word I can think of, because it's... Even as I was trying to go back and see what Swami said in this discourse, to think of something like a summary, it's so beautiful that Padyam which Swami started with...
Mm-hmm.
It starts off with a description of God and the couple of two lines. I was just sitting with Ganesh from the Telugu team and trying to find out what exactly Swami meant, what were those words meaning actually.
Yes, it was not translated.
Right, it was not translated, and you don't find that even in the transcript.
Yes.
You know, Swami starts by saying that God is one of a tender heart.
Mm-hmm.
God is very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
God is very kind. God is very, you know, good-natured.
Mm-hmm.
And that same shloka ends with a line by saying that God is without form, mm-hmm. without enemies, He is shunya. Mm-hmm. Says guna ripu hinam shunyam devam.
Mm-hmm.
In one padyam, Swami starts by saying that God is all the pleasant things that you think of, and then He's saying that He is formless and He is attributeless.
Mm-hmm.
Which only means that He is everything, He is that, He is this, and all he's, put
he's,
together.
Absolutely, He is what you think He is, and He is much beyond that too. So, that is the way Swami began that discourse. But then, following that was that shloka from the Gita, where Swami was saying how Krishna makes that statement, Arjuna, saying that, I am the Atman in everyone. I am the one. And I think later also Swami refers to that other shloka where Swami says, Kshetra and Kshetrajna.
Mm-hmm.
You are not the Kshetra, which is the body and the senses, but you are the Kshetrajna, the knower of this field.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, I am the knower in that field of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And
in fact, the verse from the Gita is, Bijam mam sarva bhutanam.
Right.
I am the seed in all the beings.
Exactly.
True.
That is the one which Swami is referring to in the beginning of this discourse. Right.
Here then Swami goes on to say that the first sound that emanated from the self is I.
I.
Now, I just have a question here. You know, sometimes we hear that Om. Is there any difference? What is the difference between I and Om? And Swami says the first sound that emanated is the self, I. So, has Swami mentioned this anywhere else in any other discourses?
At least I have not come across any discourse as such where Swami is mentioning this.
Mm.
But I remember when we were studying a particular concept in chemistry,
mm-hmm.
our teacher made this very profound reference.
Mm-hmm.
And... of course, after that, I've tried many times to locate a discourse, but I think maybe it was a discourse to a private audience.
Mm-hmm.
There is this equation where we study the zero energy, the energy at zero level.
Okay.
Like when you have translational energy, you have rotational energy. Mm-hmm. But what is the energy of a system when it is in the zero level?
Correct.
We call it energy zero. That I think there is a particular notation for that.
Mm.
And when you work out that equation, finally it comes to the point that even in that zero level, the mm-hmm. only energy which exists is the vibrational energy.
Okay.
Because you will end up with that equation which says H mu by 2,
mm-hmm.
where mu stands for vibration.
Okay.
Okay. And they believe that all that matter which we see has mm-hmm. come from that vibrational energy.
Okay.
So basically I think all these, what we utter, the syllables, what mm-hmm. we hear as sound are all distorted manifestations of the primeval Om.
Okay.
That's why Swami says Om is the substratum.
Mm-hmm.
You can always hear it. And you know, a simple example is you take a thermos flask which has got vacuum and you keep it to your ear, you can hear the humming sound.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Swami has also said that when you ring the bell in a temple,
mm-hmm.
the sound that actually comes is the Om sound.
Correct.
And all other words that have emanated, including I, me, everything, are all manifestations of this primordial sound.
Correct. I mean, as you said, the thermos flask, but if you go to the shell, in the ocean and put the shell.
Yes.
That's, you know, one with nature. And I think that vibration resonates with the primordial sound.
The Omkar.
And so Om or I think more or less it is synonymous.
And actually, if you look at it, the symbolisms in religion, at least in Sanatana Dharma, very, very graphical and very important.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the Upanishads, they say when God created, the first thing he did was he created Brahma.
Mm.
Okay, and if you see the image of Vishnu, you have Brahma coming out of the navel. And the first thing which Vishnu, who is the creator, the Purusha, does is he gives his breath to Brahma, which is believed to be the pranava.
Oh, okay.
And that is why, I mean, putting that hidden hint that when you actually chant the pranava, it is supposed to come from the nabhi. That's what they say. It has to come from within. And so beautifully put in small images, everything is cryptically present there. But of course, we just have the image and pass it on. But
Most of our scriptures are all coded in this manner. And that's why sometimes we get confused. But it has got tremendous profound significance in it. And Swami, I think, has really clarified all these things to us with wonderful example stories.
Right.
So then Swami goes on to say that from this energy or God, the first thing that came out is I. So this I, he says, the I which is associated with the mind is a mithyatma. And the atma as such is I that remains and which is not associated with the mind. So basically, as I understand it, is when creation, when he willed for that creation to start, the first thing that started was the vibration. And from that, everything else came about. So that's what Swami is saying, I and Atma. And he says, Mithyatma is if it associates itself with mind.
See, I think what Swami clarifies here, or rather, you know, the lesson we can learn from here is our existence is a multiple level, a multi-dimensional existence.
Mm-hmm.
So
the
same awareness when focused on the physical body is attachment.
Mm-hmm.
The same awareness when focused on the highest self or the Atman becomes the highest awareness. So it's like our choice. Would you like to focus our awareness on the mind or the body or the senses or the intellect or ultimately the Atman? So all that Swami is saying is that do the thing that you need to do. Focus on the Atman and we'll see the reality as it is.
Correct.
So it's a multi-dimensional existence. Unfortunately, we are caught up at the grossest level.
Actually, Swami Shivananda gives a beautiful explanation. He says there are three types of ahankara. Sattvic, tamasic and rajasic. The rajasic is the most common which you come across. You think that I am an officer and I am an achiever. I've done this. I can do this. And those kind of things. And you have the tamasic ego, which is like I'm a loser. You know, I cannot do this. I am weak. Oh, pity on me. That kind of a thing. And the sattvic one is also ego in the physical plane, but that has the ability to liberate you. And that he says is aham brahmasmi. When you link that aham to the ultimate primordial thing, whatever it is.
So that's what Swami says, that Atma Bhava is very important. And then he goes on to say, for what are you doing the sadhanas? The sadhanas, it is to know yourself. And he says, the best way of doing sadhana is to remove all anatma bhava. Any feeling that is not directly linked to the Atma, those feelings have to be removed. And he says that is the only sadhana that you have to do.
In the beautiful interpretation that I've heard Swami giving, normally this Vedantic term neti is to be taken as not this. That has been the traditional belief. So we say, no, this is not God, this is not God. And eventually we'll discover something and say, oh, this is God. But Swami just added one word. He said it is actually not only this, not only this. So it's such an all-inclusive approach wherein you say, yes, this is God, but not only this. This is God, not only this. And finally you say, oh, all this is God.
Okay.
So Swami, his explanation was, everything you are seeing is Atman, then where is the question of saying this is not God? That Anatma Bhava is what has to be removed. Because when Swami says there's only one, where is the question of second? So it's a very profound thing, and just by a tweak of a word, Swami has given completely different connotation to the neti concept.
Even connecting this with you were talking about the Omkara, and what Swami often says is it's always there. And as we were talking once, according to science, any energy which has gone out never dissipates. It's still there. So if we can tune in, probably you could listen to that primordial sound and that initial sound which came out. You know, there is this wonderful short story which is told. It's a inspirational story, you could say.
Mm.
You know, there is this man who goes to a particular town, and in this town there is supposed to be a town of a temple with 1,000 bells.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and this is supposed to have been drowned with time by the ocean.
Okay.
But the legend is anybody who goes and listens, who has a keen ear, can still hear those 1,000 bells ringing. And that happens at one point of time in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So this man sits there for 1 month, day after day, and he's trying to concentrate and trying to listen to those bells. He's not able to listen. So on the final day, he says that, you know, I'm not able to listen to this, so give it up. So he's sitting on the beach, and for the first time it strikes that, why am I worried about the bell? You know, look at the waves. Look at the beautiful sound these waves are making.
Right.
It's so wonderful. So he gets lost in the sound of the waves,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly he hears a bell tinkle. And then one after the other, he hears all the 1,000 bells ring. And the thing of the story is, in trying to find out what is not obvious, maybe the obvious beauty
the
can give you, you're missing.
The most obvious we miss out. Very true. Very true.
In fact, that's the mind. I mean, the mind is coming in between. Here, you know, after this, Swami gives a very beautiful, it's like a chain reaction. He says, as long as there is mind, there are desires. And as long as you have desires, the false notion of I and mine remain.
Mm.
And as long as the false notion of I and mine remain, ahankara comes. And as long as ahankara is there, ajnana is there. And then as long as you have ajnana, you can never get atma jnana.
So he says root causes mind. You know, he starts with the mind. Mano moolam idam jagat. So he says first your main focus of a spiritual aspirant should be mind.
Correct.
And everything bottle, all the essence of all our scriptures, I think finally if you see, you squeeze it and the thing comes out is the mind. Mind has to be tackled.
You know, quite similar to what I was telling Sai Prakash this morning, Ms. Suma, a lecturer in the Anantapur campus, you know, she made a very beautiful observation. She used to have a arts teacher when they were in school, and he did one very weird thing. You know, first he put a picture in front of them and asked them to paint. Then suddenly one day he put the picture upside down. He said, now you paint it.
Mm-hmm.
They were wondering, why is he doing this? And then he said, see, your concept of what that object is actually stopping you from painting it the perfect way. So he said, remove that concept of what it is, then you'll draw it the perfect way.
It's more of unlearning, I think we all need to do, than learning something new.
So as they say, yato vacho nivartante aprabhi manasasa. So he says, whatever you describe, you cannot
comprehend it.
Cannot comprehend it, and because it is beyond the words and beyond mind. I think, Prem, you mentioned once how a journalist went up to Swami and said, Swami,
it was one Mr. Janardhan Thakur.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. So you narrate that?
Yeah, actually what happened was this person, Janardhan Thakur, I think around the same time when Karanja and
the Blitz editor, Mr. Karanja,
those journalists came.
Right.
And he wanted for a long time to come and see Swami and see for himself whether what he was hearing was true and or false. And he happened to be on one occasion in the same flight Swami was traveling from Hyderabad to Bangalore. And he just walked up to Swami and said, Swami, can I have a word with you? No, Baba, can I have a word with you? And to his surprise, Swami was very forthcoming. Swami said, yeah, why not? Sit down. And that itself was surprising for him. And he said, Swami, I would like to come and meet you and have a discussion with you, have a word with you. Swami said, yeah, come to Bangalore, come to my ashram. I'll meet you, I'll speak to you.
Wow.
And he was so surprised and, as promised, Swami called him when he came to Bangalore. Swami called him inside. And first thing which struck him was the warmth with which Swami held his hand and was talking to him. And he found that this person is absolutely fearless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't seem to be having any ulterior motive with which he's speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami sat with him and spoke to him for 15-20 minutes. And Swami answered all his questions comprehensively and to his, more than what he was looking for.
Mm.
And at the end of it, he said, Swami, why don't you speak to the press people who are telling all kinds of things against you?
Mm.
And he said, Swami, you can win them over with whatever you have said because you're absolutely clear and there's nothing which can pin you down.
Right.
And Swami, you know, in one sentence he said, Kaisa ho sakta hai? How can it be? Swami said, अबव सेंस वाले को बिलो सेंस वाले कैसे अंडरस्टैंड कर सकते हैं.
Exactly, how beautiful. The instrument you're using itself is faulty.
So we said, what is the point in explaining to?
Because spirituality is above senses and science is below senses. So, you know, unless we go beyond it, one cannot comprehend all this.
And as a beautiful quote which says, that which is by definition beyond senses, beyond reasoning, how can it be touched by reason?
True. Correct. I think we should go to the next clip.
Yeah, exactly.
And there was a story Swami is about to narrate and we left all our audience in suspense.
Yeah. Right, I think that will be a good relief in this discourse.
Yes.
So we'll listen to that and that's the third clip we're playing in this discourse.
Padimandi murkhulu cheri nadini daatutu poyyaru. Ten stupid people undertook a pilgrimage. Tirigi nadini daatina tarvata పది మంది ఇక్కడికి వచ్చి చేరినామా లేదా అనేటువంటిది వాళ్ళకి సందేహం.
దే వాంటెడ్ టు క్రాస్ ద రివర్ అండ్ ఆఫ్టర్ క్రాసింగ్ దే గాట్ ఎ డౌట్ వెదర్ ఆల్ ది టెన్ పీపుల్
ప్రారంభించాడు. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 అయ్యో ఇంకొకటి లేడే నదిలో కొట్టుకుని పోయాడు అని ఒకరికొకరు చాలా భ్రాంతి చేత విచారం చెందుతూ వచ్చారు.
These stupid ones, each one of them started counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, leaving himself and began wondering.
నీవు చెప్పింది సరికాదు నేను చూస్తానని వాడు కూడా 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 అయ్యో నిజమే నీవు చెప్పింది ఇంకొకటి లేడే అని వాడు కూడా ఏడుస్తూ కూర్చున్నాడు.
The second person said that I don't believe you. He started counting, came up to 9 and he said, yes, what you said is true, the 10th one is lost.
అదే మార్గం నందు ప్రయాణం చేస్తున్నాడు ఒక బాటసారుడు. అతను వివేకవంతుడు. వీరి యొక్క బాధను చూచి నాయన మీరు దుఃఖించడానికి కారణం ఏమిటని ప్రశ్నించాడు.
ఎ క్లవర్ ట్రావెలర్ ఆన్ ద రోడ్ అబ్జర్వ్డ్ దిస్ అండ్ హి ఆస్క్డ్ దెమ్ వెల్ వాట్ ఇస్ ది రీజన్
ఫర్ ది వచ్చాం కానీ 9 మందే ఉన్నాం ఇంకొకటి ఈ నదిలో కొట్టుకుని పోయాడు అని ఏడ్చారు.
టెన్ ఆఫ్ అస్ కేమ్ వన్ ఈజ్ వాష్డ్ అవే ఇన్ ద రివర్ దేర్ ఫోర్ వి ఆర్ గ్రీఫ్ స్ట్రికన్ దే రిప్లైడ్
అజ్ఞానం గుర్తించి ఆ యొక్క బాటసారి ఒక్కొక్కరిని ఒకరిని 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 అని ఈ విధంగా 10 వరకు ఎంచి నాయన మీరుంటున్నారు 10 మంది కూడా కానీ ఎవరు ఎంచుతున్నారో వారు తనను తాను మర్చిపోయి ఎంచుతున్నాడు. కనుకనే ఒకరు పోయినట్టుగా నీవు విచారిస్తున్నారు. తనను తాను మరిచినటువంటి వ్యక్తి సరి అయిన సత్యాన్ని గుర్తించలేడు.
బట్ traveler counted one after another and sent all of them 10 on one side and said, well, the mistake is the person who is counting is forgetting himself. That person who forgets himself can never realize anything. That is the meaning of this story.
నీవే ఆత్మయై ఉండి నీవు ఆత్మ నిమిత్తమై మరొక దానిని నీవు ప్రార్థన గాని సాధనలు గాని చేస్తే నీ యొక్క తత్వం నీది ఏ రీతిగా గుర్తించగలవు.
When you are yourself ఆత్మ, if you are trying to find out atma and pray to some atma, what type of prayer and what type of sadhana all this is?
Ekoham bahusyam okkate anekanga maaripovatam cheta neevi bhinnatvamlo neevu abhiruchini abhiruddhipachukoni ekatvanni visvaristu vastunnavu.
There was one and it multiplied itself into many. On account of this, you are getting immersed in the diversity and forgetting the unity which underlies this diversity.
ivanni ikkudunu addamulo kanipinche pratibimbamulu vale nee yokka pratibimbamule.
All that you see outside is like a reflection in the mirror or reflections of your own self.
Bimbanni vadali pratibimbani neevu visvasistunnavu.
You are forgetting the object and placing confidence in
kanuka neevu bhramatoru kattabadutunnavu.
That is why you are bound by delusion.
భ్రమతో కట్టిపడినటువంటి వానికి బ్రహ్మ చిక్కడు.
మ్యాన్ బౌండ్ బై డెల్యూజన్ కెన్ నెవర్ ఫైండ్ బ్రహ్మ.
కనుక ఆత్మభావం అనేటువంటి దానిని మనం అనుభవించాలనుకుంటే మనం చేసేటువంటి సాధనలన్నీ కూడాను కేవలం నిరుపయోగమైనటువంటివి.
ఇఫ్ యూ రియలీ వాంట్ టు ఎంజాయ్ ది ఫీలింగ్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ, ఆల్ ది ఎఫర్ట్స్ విచ్ యు ఆర్ డూయింగ్ ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు ఫైండ్ ఆత్మ ఆర్ యూజ్లెస్.
ఈ సాధనలన్నీ కూడాను మనసును చల్లబరుస్తాయి.
బట్ ఆల్ దీస్ సాధనాస్ ఆర్ కేపబుల్ ఆఫ్ ప్యాసిఫైయింగ్
మనసును చల్లబరిచి ప్రయోజనం ఏమిటి?
దీస్ ఆర్ ఆల్ కేపబుల్ ఆఫ్ ప్యాసిఫైయింగ్.
మనసే లేకుండా చేసుకోవాలి కానీ మనసును చల్లబరితే తిరిగి దానికి వేడి ఎక్కవచ్చు.
What you have to do is you have to eliminate the mind, not pacify it.
Kanuka manonasara nimittamai aacharinchetunti yokka sadhanale aatmanveshanaku sariyainatundi sadhana.
Such sadhanas which can eliminate and annihilate mind alone are proper sadhanas for realizing atma.
Ikkada manushyandu ee dehaatma bhavana cheripovatam chetane అహం అనేటువంటిది అతన్ని ఇన్ని రకములైనటువంటి యొక్క మార్గము తిప్పుతుండాలి.
యాజ్ మ్యాన్ హెస్ ఐడెంటిఫైడ్ హిజ్ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ విత్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్, హీఈస్ ఫాలోయింగ్ ఇన్ టు ది డెల్యూజన్ అండ్ గెటింగ్ కన్ఫ్యూజ్డ్.
నేను చేస్తున్నాను, నేను అనుభవిస్తున్నాను, నేను దీన్ని జయించినాను అనేటువంటి యొక్క కర్తృత్వభావము మానవీయందు దినదినాభివృద్ధి చెందుతుండాలి.
The natural feeling that I am doing, I am enjoying, I am achieving victory is getting strengthened in man day after day gradually.
Vidyarthulara jayapachayamulu nee karmala vallana kaani nee sadhanala vallana kaani nee prayatnam vallana kaani kaligeetunti kaadu.
Success and failure are not the ones which are the result of your own actions, your own sadhana.
కేవలం నీవు భ్రాంతిలో మునిగి నీ ప్రయత్నం చేత ఈ కార్యమును నీవు సాధించినట్టుగా నీవు అహంకారమును మరింత పెంచుకుంటున్నావు.
Being deluded, you are feeling that you have been able to achieve so many things by your own
ఎన్ని ప్రయత్నములు చేసినప్పటికీ విజయాన్ని సాధించలేని కార్యములు ఎన్ని జగత్తులో మనకు కనిపించటం లేదు.
In spite of extraordinary efforts made by people, how many failures can you come across?
ఏమి చేయకపోయినప్పటికీ విజయాన్ని పొందేటువంటి కార్యము ఎన్ని మనకు కనిపించటం లేదు.
How many more are we seeing that without doing any effort, some people are achieving success?
నీవు ప్రయత్నము చేసి తద్వారా నీవు కేవలము అపజయాన్ని పొంది విచారములకు గురి అయ్యేదానికంటే దైవమును విశ్వసించి దైవ కార్యంగా నీవు నీ తత్వాన్ని నీవు గుర్తించినప్పుడే సర్వము విజయాన్ని సాధిస్తుంది.
ఇన్స్టెడ్ ఆఫ్ కంప్లీట్లీ రిలయింగ్ ఆన్ యువర్ ఓన్ ఎఫర్ట్స్ అండ్ వెన్ యూ ఫేస్ ఫెయిల్యూర్స్ ఇన్స్టెడ్ ఆఫ్ గెటింగ్ రిజెక్టెడ్, హ్యావ్ ఫుల్ ఫెయిత్ ఇన్ గాడ్, ఆఫర్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్ టు గాడ్ అండ్ దెన్ యూ విల్ అచీవ్.
మన ప్రయత్నంతో జరిగేటువంటిది ఏమీ లేదు అనేటువంటి యొక్క దీన్ని చక్కగా గుర్తించాలి.
యూ హ్యావ్ టు రియలైజ్ క్లియర్లీ దాట్ దెర్ ఇస్ నథింగ్ విచ్ ఆర్ గోయింగ్ టు అచీవ్ మీరు దేహమునందే.
ఈ విధమైన యొక్క సాక్ష్యము మనకు సాక్షాత్కరిస్తూ ఉండాలి.
యూ కెన్ గెట్ ఎనీ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ ప్రూఫ్స్ ఫ్రమ్ యువర్ ఓన్ బాడీ.
నీ దేహంలో ఉండేటువంటి గుండె కొట్టుకోవడానికి నీవు ఏ ప్రయత్నం చేస్తున్నావు?
వాట్ ఎఫర్ట్స్ ఆర్ యూ మేకింగ్ ఫార్ ది హార్ట్ బీటింగ్ అండ్ ఫంక్షనింగ్ ఇన్ యువర్ ఓన్ బాడీ?
నీవు క్షణ క్షణం కూడా విశ్వాస నిశ్వాసములు తీసుకుంటూ వదులుతున్నావు, దీనికి నీవు ఏం ప్రయత్నం చేస్తున్నావు?
వాట్ ఎఫర్ట్స్ ఆర్ యూ మేకింగ్ ఫార్ ది కాన్స్టెంట్ ఇన్హేలింగ్ అండ్
భుజించినటువంటి ఆహారమును జీర్ణింపజేస్తుంటుండాలి, దానికి నీవు ఏమి ప్రయత్నం చేస్తున్నావు?
వాట్ ఈస్ ది ఎఫర్ట్ దట్ యు ఆర్ పుట్టింగ్ ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు డైజెస్ట్ ది ఫుడ్ విచ్ యు హావ్ పార్టేకన్?
ఇవన్నీ ప్రయత్నంతో లభ్యమవుతుందాయా?
ఆర్ దీస్ థింగ్స్ అచీవ్డ్ బై ఎఫర్ట్?
కాదు కాదు కాదు,
సర్టన్లీ నాట్.
నేను బ్రతకాలి బ్రతకాలి అనుకుంటే నువ్వు బ్రతకగలుగుతున్నావా?
If you want to say that I want to live and live and live,
నువ్వు చావాలి చావాలి అనుకుంటే నువ్వు చస్తున్నావా?
Even if you want to die, can you die just like that?
నీ పుట్టుకకు నీవే కారకులా?
ఆర్ యూ రెస్పాన్సిబుల్ ఫర్ యువర్ బర్త్?
కాదు కాదు కాదు,
నాట్ అట్ ఆల్.
కనుక ఈ విషయాన్ని చక్కగా విచారణ చేస్తే కేవలము నీ కర్తృత్వ భోక్తృత్వములే ఈ అహంకార మమకారమును మరింత అభివృద్ధి గావిస్తున్నాయి.
ఇఫ్ యూ కేర్ఫుల్లీ ఎగ్జామిన్, ఇట్ ఈస్ ద డూయర్షిప్ అండ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ది ఎంజాయర్షిప్ ఇన్ యూ విచ్ ఈస్ క్రియేటింగ్.
And finally we played out that story which we stopped at last time. And as sir was saying that really there is no story which how many ever times you've heard it, it does not make you feel that I'm hearing it for the first time.
And you know, the beautiful way in which Bhagwan narrates this story is, mm-hmm. you know, gives it a completely different feel and meaning. And I've always enjoyed listening to it again and again.
That's true.
In this particular story, again, it's a story which you would hear otherwise. You know, it's about being stupid and being lacking common sense. But to bring out such a esoteric and spiritual meaning out of it, and also make you feel make you relate to that stupidity, because that is what we actually
Swami Aaron always talks is about the musk deer. He gives the example of how this deer goes running around the forest. You know, where is this fragrance coming from? Where is this fragrance? So in creation itself, Bhagwan has created such you know, beings which can be given as example. Finally, when it, you know, gets tired, Swami says it, by default, you know, it turns its head towards its belly and sleeps, and suddenly it realizes, oh, the musk is right within me. It may sound a very simple, you know, analogy, but it's so profound, because we are exactly in the same position. We are unable to understand our true reality. Swami reminds us again and again, but still we are so, you know, hooked onto our physical form, body and mind. It's so tough to get beyond that.
You know, it's like there is that famous story on faith. He says he is falling off the cliff.
Yes.
And God says, let go. Let go of that branch and I'll hold you. We say, no, Swami, we don't want to let go of my body, my mind, my this thing. If you let go, he says, the truth is there for the taking. But we say, no, 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 we are not ready to let go. We want to hold on.
You know, again, carrying on from that story where Swami is saying that one who has not counted himself, or one who has not looked at himself, can never find God. It's like a typical thing which they say, you know, if you have found your heart in a temple, it means there is a temple in your heart.
True.
You know, you cannot recognize the divinity in a temple if you have not for a, you know, some moment found that there is that divinity inside. And that's what Swami does, you know, if you look at all this, Swami saying sadhana is not required, you don't have to do. But that is one thing which Swami does. First he fascinates you and he attracts you. And then slowly makes you realize that, you know, it starts with I'm above you, below you, or all around you. And then, like Isaac Taggart once was sharing with us that first interview which he has, that analogy which Swami gives him is so fascinating. He's saying, you're all like fish in water. You know, the fish, the water is above the fish, below the fish, all around the fish, and also inside the fish.
In fact, when Prakash was talking about letting go, I just recall this beautiful story. I believe this happened in the life of Shankara. He was traveling along with his disciples, and there was a man coming, taking a cow. You know, he was holding the rope, and the cow was sort of literally being dragged behind him. So he stopped the disciples and he said, now tell me in this scenario, who is the master, who is the slave? So the disciples said, obviously, Swami, the man who is pulling the cow is the master, and see, the cow is running behind him. He said, is it so? So he said, just wait. Then he went and snapped the rope. The moment Shankaracharya snapped the rope, the cow naturally wanted to run away. It was free, so it ran away. And the man started running behind it because it was his cow. Then he said, now tell me who is the master and who is the slave. Then the disciples understood, and then he clarified. He said, we think that the cow is the slave and the man is the master, but you see, actually, who is the slave, who is the master? So the moment Swami says you leave your mind, it is ready to leave you. We don't want to leave it, because it's so nice to experience this beautiful world through our mind and our senses. So on one side we pray to Swami, Swami, please, you know, I want to go beyond the mind, Swami, I love you. On the other side we'll say, no, sorry, I cannot leave this. And Bhagwan says, sorry, at my terms and conditions you can get, you know, freedom, not at your terms and conditions. So this is a very funny thing we need to sort of understand.
But it's amazing when you get inspired by thoughts like this. And you want to try to put it in practical life. How do you put this into practice? And by constant reminding and constant introspection, possibly you start believing it. But, so, you know, are there people whom we can look up to? Like, I'm sure one of them is King Janaka. And Swami is often quoted that after he realized himself, he continued being the king. So, I mean, if we are still thinking, is it possible? Is it possible for us to lead a daily practical life even after knowing the truth? Yes, it is.
Yeah, and we have so many examples of this nature in our scriptures. And it is more than true that, in fact, such people possibly will be the most perfect beings in society.
Correct.
But you have to take that jump, you know.
Yeah.
In spirituality, it is first you do the experiment, then you get your proof. You don't have a theory already ready in hand. You have to believe it and make that, you know, jump.
And Swami, in fact, told one of the devotees, she asked Swami, Swami asked her, do you want self-realization? Do you want moksha? She said, yes, Swami. Swami said, do one thing. Don't follow anybody. Don't follow anybody. Because anything you try to follow, anybody you try to follow, it becomes a concept. It's not from the source. Because he says, don't follow anybody, then you will get.
And a similar similar conversation I have heard, though I'm not very sure of the source, but a very senior devotee, I believe, asked Bhagwan the same question. He said, Swami, what is the quickest way to moksha?
Mm-hmm.
And I was so fascinated with the answer. Swami said, the quickest way is give up this feeling that you need moksha. So even the fact that you want freedom is now becoming a block in your own mind. Like Swami, throughout the discourse, if you see the subtle part, what he's saying, he's saying you're doing all spiritual exercises which are actually strengthening the mind when the whole purpose is to eliminate the mind. So it's very funny, even from a very business perspective, if you see, you know, your purpose is in one place and your efforts are in the other place. So he said, give up this idea that I want freedom, mind freedom. He says, believe that you're already free. It's because we're not focusing on the I and we're focusing our awareness on the mind and the body. It gives us this feeling that I'm bound.
Exactly.
So we have to give up this focus and change our focus rather than saying, come on, how to strengthen my mind now.
It's like Swami telling that somebody lost the needle and she was searching outside the hut. When they asked, where did you lose the needle? She said, inside the hut, but it's so dark. So I'm searching for it outside.
Precisely.
So your problem is something else and your solution is something else.
Yes, yes.
So you're trying to look for it elsewhere.
Talking about not letting go, a similar interaction with a devotee, it seems an elderly devotee, told Swami, Swami asked her, what do you want? He said, Swami, I want self-realization, I want liberation. And Swami said, shall I give you now? He said, no, no, Swami, not right now. I have some affairs to settle still.
All this only goes to show that I think we are not ready, frankly, to tell you the truth.
Right.
Maybe we are not ready, though we ask for it. And Swami, out of his compassion still, you know, he says, take it. Any moment I am ready, you can take it from me.
In fact, I remember a very interesting interaction which happened when we were students. And Swami had called our class inside for a final interaction, kind of a send-off. And Swami called us and said, the bhajanol. One of the boys got up and asked Swami, Swami, why don't you give realization to everybody?
You
know, is it wrong for me to seek that Swami should give realization to everybody? Swami said, see, ask what you want. Don't ask on behalf of everybody else.
Right.
He said, no, Swami, see, you talk of loka samastha sukhino bhavantu. You have to ask for the best for everybody. And in my knowledge, this is the best. So what is wrong in me saying, let everybody get liberation? So just then, this whole interaction was happening in Telugu. And Swami looked to one of the boys, who obviously did not understand a word of what was being spoken. And Swami asked him, hey boy, what do you want? And this boy got up and he said, Swami, I want one more birth. Swami was very amused. And Swami said, why do you want one more birth? He said, Swami, I always want to serve my country by joining the army. This birth it didn't happen because this was a better option of being and living with Swami. So I've come away here and I've spent my youth in Swami's presence. But I want one more birth where I can go and serve the army. And Swami, very pleasingly, Swami said, very good boy, you know, good thoughts and all that, and blessed him. And Swami looked at the boy who was asking the question before this and he said, see, this is why. People should be ready to ask the ultimate and then God will give. There's no point in asking for the others and what they're not ready for.
Because Swami always used to say, no, I'm ready to give, but your vessel is, you know, sort of having so many holes in it, so whatever grace I pour flows. This is an analogy Swami would always give to remind us of the fact that you're not prepared yourself. Though we may be undeserving, out of compassion Bhagwan gives, but the vessel which has to receive has to be prepared. And that preparation, I think Swami is again pointing to here, is not all the sadhana that we normally think about. He says, okay, it is a good, in fact, many a time Swami has said it is a good way to spend time.
Correct.
Here he even nullifies that. He said it's not even a good way to spend time. You are in fact strengthening your mind by keeping on reminding yourself, I am the mind, I am the body. And whatever rituals you do is strengthening that. But he says what you need to do is actually annihilate the mind. You know, I just saw that one line I was hearing Swami said, everything is a reflection.
Yes.
And I'm reminded of the beautiful spiritual arithmetic that Swami gives. Again, to sort of point at the truth. He says, you have a mirror. You stand in front of the mirror. Now you're the object. And you see your reflection in the mirror. So Swami says, how many entities are there? There are three. One is you yourself, which is the object. The mirror, which is the instrument for reflection. And then your actual image, three. So then, you know, he would ask the students, okay, students, 3 minus 1, how much? And, you know, we'll always say, Swami, 2. And Swami will tell very joyfully, kadu kadu, spiritual mathematics, 3 minus 1 is 1. And then he would explain, you just remove the mirror. The mirror goes, and along with it goes the image. And only you are left. And then Swami would, you know, explain, he would say, see, mind is the mirror. And you're actually seeing Swami's reflection in the mind as this whole universe. So he says, you're caught up in this reflection, you're caught up in the universe because it's so attractive, forgetting that actually it is God's reflection. He says, just calm your mind completely so that it becomes like a pure mirror, and it will help you to turn around and see that actually it's only a reflection. The truth is Bhagwan and our own divinity. So Swami, you know, in so many analogies, stories, he again and again reminded us of this truth.
Very beautiful. In fact, talking about the mirror and the reflection, in the Dakshinamurti Stotram, it says, Vishwam Darpana Darpamana Nagari. He is one who looks at the entire universe as a reflection in the mirror.
Right.
And then the concept of Dakshinamurti itself is so beautiful because he is ever youthful and ever silent. And in his silence, his disciples are the greatest yogis, right, who have stilled the mind. Mm. So basically the knowledge of Atman is communicated through his silence, because there is nothing to convey to people who have already quietened their mind. He just is showing them what they are not. That's what I'm
talking about, stilling of the mind. Swami is making a very profound statement here. He's saying it's not enough if you still the mind.
Correct.
Mind has to be annihilated.
Correct.
And in fact, if you see the Vedas, you have the Samhitas, the Brahmanas and the Aranyakas. It is believed the Samhitas, or whatever we chant, you know, whatever is the Shrutis which were received, they were received by a stilled mind. And they were received as, when you remove this mind's aberrations and the waves of the mind, then those sounds were received. But the true essence of it, what we call Upanishads or Vedanta, was received by those who became Amanaskas. Those who absolutely annihilate.
What they said, they cognize the truth beyond the mind.
And they had, that's why it's called Aranyakas, because those were the ones who retired to the forest, who removed themselves completely from all disturbances. It's not in the physical sense. Removing themselves from the disturbances means that completely annihilating the mind and that Amanaska Stiti, that's what they call.
And Prem, you know, Swami always used to explain the same concept through this example of a kerchief. He would say, see, this is a cloth which has got the warp and the woof.
Right.
So he would say, mind, though we cannot see it, it's like an operating system or the software. He say, it is something like that. And all the desires are the warp and the woof. So he always reminded us that the way to annihilate the mind is remove the desire one by one. One by one, one by one. Then, you know, you'll find that it is becoming thinner and thinner and eventually it disappears. That's why he would say, you know, we say, I want happiness. And Swami always gave this beautiful formula. You know, I'm so thrilled by it because nothing can be as succinct and as
simple.
Picky as that. I want happiness. He'll say, remove the want.
Ego. I.
First remove the I. It is the ego. And then remove the want, which is the desires. Happiness will be, you know, Swami himself says, so beautiful way. Happiness is already with you. So easy, but yet so tough. So he has given the guideline. He has given us the process. He has given us every technique that one would need for it. I think what is left is our will.
Correct.
To do it.
Absolutely. In fact, I think I've mentioned this before. There was a wonderful dream one of the alumni once shared with us, where the scene was that of a Balvika's class, and Swami was there in the Balvika's class. And Swami asked this question to the class, "No, what is the thing which is most essential to get anything accomplished?" So one of the smart children were there. He got up and said, "Swami, self-confidence." And even before Swami could react, the whole class starts applauding, because they found, what a beautiful answer. It's the perfect answer. Everybody starts applauding. And Swami is smiling, waiting for the applause to die down. And then Swami says, "Yes, self-confidence is important, but there is something which comes before that." And then Swami says, "The will to do." The will to do something is most important for the task to be accomplished. Even before you say that I can do it, the desire to do it. And of course, talking about the will to do it, that is what actually Swami is completely debunking in the last part of the clip which we played.
We have will to do, but as again Swami says, we are doing the wrong things perhaps. You know, again and again
that's
he reiterates, Mirche says, sadhana anta, it is not the, you know, actually spirituality. You know, I'm reminded of this very humorous story. Swami says there was this man who was very short-tempered and he wanted to overcome his anger. So he told his wife, "I'm giving you all up," and he went to the forest. And there he really sat. He was genuine in his pursuit. So he sat there and meditated and completely overcame all his anger. So there was about 3-4 years he stayed there. He was so sure that he has overcome his anger. And then he said, "Now I should go back." So a very practical approach. You know, he said, now I must go back, stay with my wife and then show her that, see, I've really overcome anger. So Swami beautifully says, he comes back home. Then the wife says, oh, Vachesara, have you come? Says, yes. She said, have you overcome your anger? He says, yes. And she said, really you've overcome your anger? He said, yes. No, are you sure you were? Yeah, are you sure? Oh, what do you mean, you know? He loses his temper. So the wife, in fact, is a more wise woman, because she knew that, you know, it's not possible this way. And then Swami says, what is the great deal in going to a forest where there are no irritants, no provocative people? And you know, you sit there and there is very easy to overcome anger. Being in the midst of society, in your family, that is where you have to overcome. So being in the midst of this world, we have to shift our focus from the mind and the body and turn it inwards to the I or the Atman. That is the challenge Swami is referring
to. It's almost like walking out of the swimming pool and going to the mountaintop to learn swimming.
Yeah, it's literally like that.
And of course about efforts Swami speaks in the end of this clip, which is
one of the most strong
points that Swami is making. And this again is, you know, Swami is trying to draw our attention to something which we go through every day in our life. Swami is saying that what efforts are you doing to keep your heart beating? What efforts are you doing to keep the digestion process in place? And if you look at it, Swami is of course not going into the detail. If you go to a person who studies physiology, he will tell you that there are millions of processes which are happening in your body. And as a chemist, I know what it takes to do 3 experiments running in your lab and to know that thousands of biochemical reactions are happening in the body
just
without your volition.
Perfectly, yes.
And that's why they say in pathology, the textbook starts with a statement, to be normal is a miracle.
Oh, really? Oh. So is it there in the textbook?
Yeah, this is what
very profound. To be born
Arvind
normal.
Arvind was sharing from the hospital. He was telling that pathology starts with this. To be normal is a miracle because it takes so many things to be normal.
Correct. The permutation and combination, you can imagine. One cell in a body goes wrong, you know, it can cause a problem.
And that's what Swami is saying here. What effort are you putting to make all this happen? And can you with your will make any of these things
stop? I'm reminded of a beautiful experience. Perhaps I should share this now. And I do hope the concerned person, the student about whom this is, hears this episode. It was an MBA student who had a hole in his heart. This was in the early 90s. And Swami was told about it. And Swami said, let him be operated in our hospital. It so happened that because he was doing his MBA, Swami said, let him have it in the vacation, summer vacation. So the day was fixed and then he was admitted in the hospital and Swami had left for Kodaikanal. Now the best part of this was, we heard the story from both sides. You know, there were our students, our own boys who had gone to Kodaikanal with Swami. And here there was one of our teacher who had, you know, with the permission of the doctor, been in the operation room during the surgery. So now what happens if you see in this bypass surgery, you know, the main moment as doctor says everything goes fine. Finally, you know, when the heart has to be started again, it's given an electric shock, you know, a jerk to get started.
Right.
And they all confess that that moment, you know, nothing is there in their hands. So you never know. It's just a miracle. It starts beating again. So it so happened that if they reached this point, the surgery was done and now they had to, you know, restart the heart. And it did not start.
Oh God.
This is what we have heard from the concerned people who were there. And now just shifting the scene to Kodaikanal, Swami is seated in the main hall talking to the students. Suddenly Swami pauses. He looks up into the sky. He tells the students, gone. So the boys didn't understand what, you know. Then Swami says, you know, your classmate, that particular boy, today's operation, Swami said, gaya. And you know, Swami's face was so serious, so students were so like, you know, somebody else says it's okay, Swami, you're saying. They were all so down and Swami let this pass for a few seconds. And then suddenly, you know, Swami burst out into laughter. He said, buddhi ledu. When Swami is there, you think anything can happen. He has come back. And you know, what the story happened here was, at that point, the doctors and all of them were so shocked because you never know. See, it doesn't start. You try all your means. They actually chanted Sai Gayatri. And you know, that's what they say. They do. They close their eyes and when there's no other hope, and suddenly the heart started beating. Now, this was a two-side story we heard later on from our teacher and we were so stunned. You know, the direct proof of what Swami says, who do you think is beating the heart? What effort are we putting in?
In fact, you know, even as you're saying this, I'm just reminded of a talk which I heard recently. Brother Litesh from Bombay. He was sharing once when Swami was in Bombay and Swami was interacting with a few youth over there. Somebody asked this question. He said, Swami, is there anything in our effort? You know, is there anything worthwhile in our effort? Or is everything predestined or, you know, governed by the divine will? And then Swami gave a lot of explanations, finally saying that the divine will overrules individual effort. And that did not really sink in with the group, because here is Swami saying that you can do anything, but you're not doing it without the divine will. That was the essence of what Swami said. So Swami said, shall I show you? And Swami told that boy who had asked that question, lift your hand, lift your left hand. So immediately the boy lifted his left hand. And Swami said, see, now you wanted to lift your left hand, and I have permitted you to lift your left hand. So you could lift it. And then Swami said, now my will is not there. I don't want you to lift your hand. You lift your hand. That boy says that he's not able to move his hand an inch. And that boy became panicky. He thought that he's got paralyzed or something. And he started sweating. Swami said, no, no, nothing's wrong with you. It's just that my will is not there that you should lift your hands.
Amazing.
And all the time in the background, this divine will is what is really enabling us to even speak now.
And you know, thinking of that Swami was here to do this for us, to show us this thing working. You know, it's I'm reminded of what GVP sir told us, you know, when we asked him, so what is so special about living with an avatar, if God is everywhere? And he told a very beautiful thing. He said, when you're writing an exam, suppose your class teacher is the examiner, okay? He will not reveal the answer to you, but when you make a right answer, you make the right choice, you know, multiple choice question, he would just come by and smile and say, good. And he says that confidence which comes when the examiner tells that is irreplaceable. And that's what Swami did to all of us. And you know, you could find these explanations anywhere in any spiritual textbook. But that physical presence to come and tell you that, yes, this is the right direction. No, no, this is not the right.
That's what gives us the confidence, you know. He sort of assured us, each one of us, that, okay, you're on the right path.
And the feeling that if I go wrong, I'll be picked up and I'll be hauled up.
In different ways, he teaches that. So that at that point of time, I wanted to play sitar in front of Swami. So I told Swami, I want to play. No, why, Stava? You'll play. I said, no, Swami, you have to play through me. That is the correct answer. That is the correct answer. If you play, everybody will run away from here.
You wouldn't spare any moment to teach us a lesson.
Even Gita Mohan Ram says that. After her first most nervous speech, it was the first time she was speaking in front of an audience, and she comes back to Swami and said, Swami, I've done it. You know, you've told me to speak, I've spoken. That's it, Swami, no more speeches. Immediately Swami says, oh, so you are speaking.
It's so tough, you know. I mean, to keep reminding ourselves of every moment that, no, I'm not the doer, I'm not the doer. But I think that is the key to this entire sadhana which Swami is talking about, the true sadhana.
You know, it's like once there was an interview with Ustad Zakir Hussain, the famous tablist. And he mentioned that it's not that I sit for 12 hours or 16 hours and keep practicing. You know, I go with the flow. The practice is going on in my mind all the time. I'm going and playing cricket, I'm going and doing something. Then suddenly I come back. The tabla, practice on tabla is there in the back of my mind. Whatever I do, I may be going out for shopping, I may do something else, but that riyaz is going on in the back of my mind. The practice is going on in the back of my mind. So the mental practice, the constant, you know, constantly he's thinking of that. So he says that itself is practice. And that is more effective than sitting there for hours and doing the same thing. Yes, that is important for you to get hold of the instrument and the way you play.
You know, it's so beautiful because you don't have to be a real spiritualist to actually go through these experiences. You know, that's what even somebody like Rahul Dravid, a cricketer, he says, of course they have different terms to refer to the same thing. He says, I get into a zone. That's what he says. He says, when you're playing cricket, and he says it's a kind of a meditation. Because every ball after ball, for an entire day, you're looking at the bowler's hand and trying to find out what he's trying to bowl at you. He says, you get into a mode, and he says, I've gone into that zone a couple of times. You can never get me out then, because I'm not playing then. I know exactly what's coming to me, and my body knows exactly what stroke is to be played.
And I think all professionals talk of this. They refer to this as the alpha state, you know.
Right.
Wherein at that point, it's happening. A musician is not playing, it's happening. A speaker is not speaking, it's happening. A sportsman is not playing, it's happening. I think that should be the state in which every individual who is really a spiritual aspirant should be. Life is happening.
Exactly. You know, there's another amazing and astounding thing. I saw it on a DVD. It's actually called Bhinnashaj. Okay, it is the life of the famous musician Kishori Amonkar, Srimati Kishori Amonkar. And, you know, she actually demonstrates something which is so unbelievable. There has been a complaint that she takes a lot of time to come out from the green room to the stage. So people are already waiting. But she says, what can I do? I have to get into that mood. And I have to get, that raga has to pervade me. And it has to pervade my instrument. And it has to fill us. Only then I can. So she actually did the demonstration on the video. What she did was, now she says, now I am planning to sing this particular raga, Maru Bihag, for example. And then she plays her surmandal. And it sounds perfectly in tune with that raga. It gives you the notes of the raga and it's very beautifully in sync with the raga. But when she actually plays individual strings, it is not in tune. Can you believe that? It's the soul of the music, the power of her involvement is so powerful that it even pervades her instrument. And it doesn't matter. She says, there are times when my surmandal is technically perfectly tuned to the raga, but it may not produce the feeling that I want. I mean, what is apparent and what is seen, there's something so subtle beyond that. And she says that when it is perfectly tuned, sometimes I don't get. That's why I sit in the green room. That's why I pray to God. And in fact, in that album, it's very beautifully she says, Lord, throughout my life, I have served these seven notes. Sare gama pa da ni sa. I pray that they don't abandon me in my old age. She says that, and again, one of the most amazing things, since we are still on the topic, she says, she lost her voice actually. And she lost her voice for 10 years. 10 long years for a singer to lose his or her voice. You can imagine what it is. But she says, God wanted me to sing to him inside.
Wow.
She says that. Feeling. She says that I sang. Every day I continued singing, but I sang to him inside myself because there was no voice that was coming out. And she said, I knew it that I will get back my voice.
Amazing.
And her brothers also come on the video and they say that we all had given up hope. We all thought that she would never be able to sing again, but she was always cheerful and she sang for the Lord within her, inside her. And after 10 years, her voice just came back again. Can you believe it?
Like when you talked of that she's praying and we referred to so many examples, I think what happens at that time is again, actually, consciously, unconsciously, we are shifting our focus to our inner self.
That's right.
Which Swami is actually asking us to do. What we do when we pray is we forget the mind-body, we are thinking either of Swami or Krishna, whichever form. And indirectly what's happening is our entire awareness is now focused on the self. And the moment that happens, we are instruments.
He takes over.
He takes over. The body is instrument, mind is instrument, and his will happens, and that's where success is all.
And he says that is the state of meditation.
Exactly.
Concentration, contemplation, and meditation. He says concentration is below the senses, contemplation is above the senses, meditation is beyond everything.
Beyond.
Pandit Shukma Sharma, incidentally, we played out an interview of his, that very interview this morning. In that, he shares this incident. He is on a tour to the US where he's giving a few concerts. And in one particular city, he has given a concert, I think one of the cities in Canada. And after the concert, they were arranged for a special dinner gathering where the host is kind of honoring Pandit Shukma Sharma there. So they're all having there, and it's a very casual gathering where everybody is coming up to him and telling him how well he played. So one particular gentleman comes up to him and calls him aside. And he says, look, I know... this, what I'm going to tell you is going to be a little weird. Have you heard of anybody called Sai Baba? He says. And Shukma Sharma says, yeah, I know. I go to him also. He says, yeah, I'm not a devotee of Sai Baba. I know how he looks because I've seen pictures of his. I've seen books of his. For some time when you were playing this evening, I saw him sitting in your place.
Amazing.
He said, I really saw him sitting. This is not an illusion. I am not a devotee, so I don't get visions like this.
Right.
But I really saw him sitting in your place. I didn't even know that you're a devotee. Okay, and he was so surprised by it. And in the same tour, a couple of weeks later, he is performing in another city in another dinner gathering after the concert. This time another person comes up to him and very hesitantly calls him aside and says, Panditji, I want to share something with you. And he says, I know you're a devotee of Swami. I am also a devotee of Swami. But today I had an experience which is very special. And he said the same thing. When we were playing there, for some time I saw Swami sitting there. And he says, how do I explain this? One non-devotee and one devotee.
They get so tuned to Swami that, you know, everything becomes one.
Meditation. I think in that state of meditation,
No difference.
There's no difference.
I think we must spend little time on what Swami has told about this, because this may not be very easily, you know, digestible. He says that all that you do you think results are a consequence of your human efforts? And he says, how many instances are there where you may have put in all your best,
correct,
but you have not got success?
Correct.
How many instances are there where you have done nothing and success has been bestowed on you?
Correct.
Then, you know, this is a little difficult. So then where are goals? Where are objectives? Where is planning? Where are targets? Business targets? So this whole, it's a paradigm shift in thinking. You know, how do we really, I think we need to try to understand this. How would you explain this?
The one thing which occurs to me is that I always used to think like this. You know, this was the imagery which I used to imagine. Like suppose there is this football player who's taking a penalty shootout. Okay, there is a goalkeeper who is trying to stop him from taking the... Technically speaking, if you ask what is the probability of him getting, you might say so many. These are the different factors, which the angle with which he kicks, the strength with which he kicks. But actually, the probability is only 1/2. Either he makes it or he doesn't make it. Either he gets a goal, he doesn't make the goal. And what does it depend on? As I said, the angle with which he kicks, the power with which he kicks. But it also depends equally on whether the goalkeeper is able to read him well. So which means, as much as it depends on him, it does not depend on him. So what, if you look at what the Bhagavad Gita says, or what Swami always says, now you have two options: whether you keep your satisfaction on the result, or you keep the satisfaction on how perfectly you do the action.
Exactly.
And he said, if you can put your satisfaction only on the action, then you'll always be happy,
because that's what is in our control.
That is that is the only
other
thing
component is not in our control. This is in our control. So why don't we, you know, sort of peg our satisfaction and happiness on the process? And that's, as you said, Gita is all about that. He says, enjoy the process. Forget the outcome. May happen, may not happen.
That is one way of looking at it. There's a very weird explanation I am getting to my mind.
Okay.
It may be right, may not be right.
Go ahead. You have right over the process. The outcome is not yours.
See, if there's a businessman,
right,
he has to do his duty.
Yes.
And he is doing the duty. But the fault lies in him thinking that he is doing the duty. Now he has to observe. So suppose there is a businessman doing conducting a meeting. What is it that is conducting the meeting? It is his body that is conducting the meeting, based on experiences that his mind has got,
right,
based on his knowledge which his buddhi has got. But if even in that state of conducting the meeting, the businessman is able to see himself conducting the meeting, if he is able to see himself away from the conducting the meeting, then he conducts the meeting in the best possible way.
Right.
There is no chance he can go wrong, because he is not limiting himself to the body. He is looking at himself.
He's become an instrument.
Yeah, the body has become an instrument.
True.
And he is looking at the body. So obviously what happens is the divine energy or that awareness works through the body and brings success
and
to
what
it.
That does is always the best. It's that, perfection.
Exactly.
What Swami does is perfect.
Right. One thing which would occur to a person is, you know, it's a kind of a fatalistic approach. You're saying that if I'm successful or if I'm a failure, don't blame me. I'm not the one who's doing. But you know, that is where the dictum in the Bible, which is very important. He says, do unto others what you would do, and what you want others to do unto you.
Correct.
If you are in a state where you're not blaming anybody for anything, if you're in a state where you're not giving credit for anything to anybody, I think you are right in applying it to yourself too. I think that is the touchstone. When you're spontaneously able to do what you're doing to yourself, to everybody around you, then you're actually doing it and not aping it.
In fact, even ahimsa and himsa, Swami says, harming yourself That is also ahimsa.
That is also ahimsa too.
Ahimsa is you should not harm yourself. You are harming yourself by limiting yourself.
True.
So basically, the moment you limit yourself to the body, you limit yourself and you say, I am this, I am this, I am this, that is himsa.
This is one more perspective I got to the outcomes, which I was always appealed to me very much is, let's say there's a student who is studying for his exam. Now, no doubt he has a goal in mind, he has an outcome in mind, he wants to get the best grade. And I think Gita really, if you see the fine print in Gita, Krishna never says, don't plan for a goal. But he says, don't get obsessed with the goal because it's not in your hand. So an ideal student would be the one who puts in his best effort. And if really he has focused only on putting the effort, now the entire acid test is how does he respond when the result comes. So let's say he has got a very good result. He should not start saying, oh, I've done it, you know, I'm great. Because there could have been another time when it has not happened. So he must be humble enough to say, yes, I may have put in my best, but it is God's grace. And suppose the result is not favorable, that's where the test lies. Does he get depressed, frustrated, or does he say, forget it, I'll try my best next time. I think that is what the Gita says. Don't get obsessed and attached to the outcome. You may plan for it, but don't be hooked onto it because that is not in your hand. The process is in the hand and enjoy the process.
And it's also about being, in a sense, judgmental. You know, if you look at devotion, you say, Swami responds to the feeling. Yes, Swami does respond to the feeling, but we tend to judge people based on Swami's response.
Yes, yes. We are you know, we, all sorts of putting people in black and white.
That is what we do with efforts also. If we really believe that effort is not giving the result, we should not judge a person's effort based on the result he is getting for that effort. We often say that if he has not become a successful businessman, he has not put in good effort. He's
so not put in sincere effort. So you should not judge anybody as good or bad. So there is no good or bad.
Yes.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
A lot of lessons to learn from, Bhagwan's message.
I think speaking about Advaitam, we have lost all track of discipline and time.
We got so absorbed in that, you know.
Right, right. But I think as we started off before with this discourse, that's the thing, because what Swami is telling here is in a quick succession, very, very profound concepts.
So it needs a lot of mananam.
Correct.
Only then, you know, like you churn the milk and then the butter comes. Unless we do a lot of churning, clarity does not emerge.
So, am I wrong if I put it in this way? When Swami says all sadhanas are not needed, you cannot take it on face value in the sense that stop doing any bhajan, stop doing. Means what Swami is saying is know the meaning, understand why you are doing it, and then you do it. You are only spending time in a fruitful
manner. Necessary but not sufficient.
Take it in the right way
that it is essential, but that's not, don't get caught up saying, oh, this is it, I have arrived. It's not that. It's just not even the beginning. Preparation.
And that's what Swami says, all that man does, I don't know whether he's already said this in the discourse so far or he's telling it later.
Yeah.
He says that all that man does, be it sadhana or any activity, it is only for self-satisfaction.
Yes.
Nothing
and
else.
And possibly preparing the mind to get ready to turn inward, which is the beginning of spirituality.
Right. As Swami says, you know, all detachment leads you to ruin, but there are some, all attachment leads you to ruin, but there are some attachments which can lead you to detachment.
Yes.
And as even some doership-based activities can actually lead you to giving up the doership. Maybe that's what we can hope when you're doing sadhana at least. So I think we played only one clip today, but that clip was a wonderful clip, and I'm sure, dear listeners, we have not absolutely covered everything that Swami has told there. But I feel, as Sir was also mentioning, mananam is the most important thing. What we've done is, in a very small way, just three of us here trying to do a bit of mananam. We hope that each one of you and each one of us do this in our own way, roll it in our mind and actually get the essence which Swami wants each one of us to get. And with that prayer, on behalf of Sai Prakash, I thank Rangarajan sir for being with us, and on behalf of him, I offer our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet and this effort of ours at Swami's lotus feet. Shortly, Bishu will be joining you for the last segment of the day, his Martyrs' Day special. In the last segment, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. We'll meet you next week at 7:30 with the next episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nirdhyasanam. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.